Cove, being pulled ashore by more grunting and cursing men. Their features were vague through the gauze of her veil, but Nina glimpsed the tattoos on their forearms. A feral cat curled into a crown. The symbol of the Dime Lions.
Money,
one of them said, as they clambered out of the boat. Kaz handed over a stack of Kruger, and once it was counted, the Dime Lion waved them on. They followed a row of torches up an uneven path to the leeward side of the prison. Nina tilted her head back to gaze at the high black towers of the fortress known as Hellgate, a dark fist of stone thrusting up from the sea. She'd seen it from afar before, when she'd paid a fisherman to take her out to the island. But when she'd asked him to bring her closer, he'd refused.
Sharks get mean there, he'd claimed. Bellies full of convict blood.
Nina shuddered at the memory. A door had been propped open, and another member of the Dime Lions led Nina and the others inside. They entered a dark, surprisingly clean kitchen, its walls lined with huge vats that looked better suited to laundry than cooking. The room smelled strange, like vinegar and sage. Like a mercher's kitchen, Nina thought. The Kirch believed that work was akin to prayer. Maybe the merchant wives came here to scrub the floors and walls and windows to honor Gezin, the god of industry and commerce, with soap and water and the chafing of their hands. Nina resisted the urge to gag. They could scrub all they liked. Beneath that wholesome scent was the indelible stench of mildew, urine, and unwashed bodies. It might take an actual miracle to dislodge it. They passed through a dank entry hall, and she thought they would head up into the cells, but instead, they passed through another door and onto a high stone walkway that connected the main prison to what looked like another tower.
Where are we going?
Nina whispered. Kaz didn't answer. The wind picked up, lifting her veil and lashing her cheeks with salt spray. As they entered the second tower, a figure emerged from the shadows, and Nina barely stifled a scream.
Inej,
she said on a wavering breath. The Suli girl wore the horns and high-necked tunic of the Gray Imp, but Nina recognized her anyway. No one else moved like that, as if the world were smoke and she was just passing through it.
How did you even get here?
Nina whispered to her. I came earlier on a supply barge. Nina ground her teeth.
Do people just come and go from Hellgate for fun?
Once a week they do, said Inej, her little imp horns bobbing along with her head.
What do you mean, once a—
Keep quiet,
Kaz growled.
Don't shush me, Brecker, Nina whispered furiously. If it's this easy to get into Hellgate—
The problem isn't getting in. It's getting out. Now shut up and stay alert.
Nina swallowed her anger. She had to trust Kaz to run the game. He'd made sure she didn't have any other choice. They entered a tight passageway. This tower felt different from the first. Older, its rough-hewn stone walls blackened by smoking torches. Their Dime Lion guide pushed open a heavy iron door and gestured for them to follow him down a steep staircase. Here, the smell of bodies and refuse was worse, trapped by the sweating moisture of salt water. They spiraled lower, into the bowels of the rock. Nina clung to the wall. There was no banister, and though she could not see the bottom, she doubted the fall would be kind. They didn't go far, but by the time they reached their destination, she was trembling, her muscles wound taut, less from exertion than the knowledge that Matthias was somewhere in this terrible place.
He is here. He is under this roof.
Where are we?
She whispered, as they ducked through cramped stone tunnels, passing dark caves fitted with iron bars.
This is the old prison, Kaz said. When they built the new tower, they left this one standing.
She heard moaning from inside one of the cells.
They still keep prisoners here?
Only the worst of them.
She peered between the bars of an empty cell. There were shackles on the wall, dark with rust and what might have been blood. Through the walls, a sound reached Nina's ears, a steady pounding, She thought it was the ocean at first, but then she realized it was chanting.
They emerged into a curving tunnel. To her right were more old cells, but light poured into the tunnel from staggered archways on the left, and through them she glimpsed a roaring, rowdy crowd. The Dime Lion led them around the tunnel to the third archway, where a prison guard dressed in a blue and gray uniform was posted, rifle slung across his back.
"Four more for you," the Dime Lion shouted over the crowd. Then he turned to Kaz.
"If you need to leave, the guard will call for an escort. No one goes wandering off without a guide. Understood?"
Of course, wouldn't dream of it," Kaz said from behind his ridiculous mask.
"Enjoy,"
the Dime Lion said with an ugly grin. The prison guard waved them through.
Nina stepped under the arch and felt as if she'd fallen into some strange nightmare. They were on a jutting stone ledge, looking down into a shallow, crudely made amphitheater. The tower had been gutted to create an arena. Only the black walls of the old prison remained, the roof long since fallen in or destroyed, so that the night sky was visible high above, dense with clouds and free of stars. It was like standing in the hollowed-out trunk of a massive tree, something long dead and howling with echoes. Around her, masked and veiled men and women crowded onto the terraced ledges, stamping their feet as the action proceeded below. The walls surrounding the fighting pit blazed with torchlight, and the sand of the arena floor was red and damp where it had soaked up blood. In front of the dark mouth of a cave, a scrawny, bearded man in shackles stood next to a big wooden wheel, marked with what looked like drawings of little animals. He'd clearly once been strong, but now his skin hung in loose folds and his muscles sagged. A younger man stood beside him in a mangy cape made from a lion's skin, his face framed by the big cat's mouth. A garish gold crown had been secured between the lion's ears, and its eyes had been replaced with bright silver dimes.
"Spin the wheel," the young man commanded.
The prisoner lifted his shackled hands and gave the wheel a hard spin. A red needle ticked along the edges as it spun, making a cheerful clattering noise. Then slowly, the wheel came to a stop. Nina couldn't quite make out the symbol, but the crowd bellowed, and the man's shoulders drooped as a guard came forward to unlock his chains. The prisoner cast them aside into the sand, and a second later Nina heard it, a roar that carried even over the excited baying of the crowd. The man in the lion cape and the prison guard stepped hurriedly into a rope ladder and were lifted out of the pit to the safety of a ledge, as the prisoner seized a flimsy-looking knife from a bloody bunch of weapons lying in the sand. He backed as far away from the mouth of the tunnel as he could get. Nina had never seen a creature like the one that crawled into view from the tunnel. It was some kind of reptile, its thick body covered in gray-green scales, its head wide and flat, its yellow eyes slitted. It moved slowly, sinuously, its low-slung body sliding lazily over the ground. There was a white crust around the broad crescent of its mouth, and when it opened its jaws to roar again, something wet, white and foaming dripped from its pointed teeth.
"What is that thing?" Nina asked.
"Rinka Moten," said Inej, "a desert lizard. The poison from its mouth is lethal."
"It seems pretty slow on its feet."
"Yes, it seems that way."
The prisoner lunged forward with his knife. The big lizard moved so quickly Nina could barely track it. One moment, the prisoner was bearing down on it. The next, the lizard was on the other side of the arena. Bare seconds later, it had slammed into the prisoner, pinning him to the ground as he screamed, its poison dripping over his face, leaving smoky trails wherever it touched his skin. The creature dropped its weight on the prisoner with a sickening crunch and set about slowly mauling his shoulder as he lay there shrieking. The crowd was booing. Nina averted her eyes, unable to watch.
"What is this?"
"Welcome to the Hell Show," said Kaz. "Pekka Rollins got the idea a few years back, and pitched it to the right council member."
"The Merchant Council knows?"
Of course they know, Nina. There's money to be made here.
Nina dug her fingernails into her palms. That condescending tone made Kaz so slappable. She knew Pekka Rollins' name well. He was the reigning king of the barrel. The owner of not one, but two gambling palaces. One luxurious, the other catering to sailors with less to line their pockets, and several of the higher-end brothels. When Nina had arrived in Ketterdam a year ago, she'd been friendless, penniless, and far from home. She'd spent the first week in the Kirch law courts, dealing with the charges against Matthias. But once her testimony was complete, she'd been unceremoniously dumped at First Harbor with just enough money to book passage back to Ravka. Desperate as she'd been to return to her country, she'd known she couldn't leave Matthias to languish in Hellgate. She had no idea what to do. But it seemed rumors of a new Grisha Korporalnik in Ketterdam had already circulated through the city. Pekka Rollins' men had been waiting for her at the harbor, with the promise of safety and a place to stay. They'd taken her to the Emerald Palace, where Pekka himself had leaned heavily on Nina to join the Dime Lions, and had offered to set her up in business at the sweet shop. She'd been close to saying yes, desperate for cash and terrified of the slavers who patrolled the streets. But that night, Inej had crawled through her window on the top floor of the Emerald Palace, with a proposal from Kaz Brekker in hand. Nina never could figure out how Inej had managed to scale 6 rain-slick stories of stone in the middle of the night. But the dreg's terms were far more favorable than those offered by Pekka and the Dime Lions. It was a contract that she might actually pay off in a year or two, if she was smart with her money. And Kaz had sent the right person to argue his case. A Suli girl just a few months younger than Nina, who had grown up in Ravka and who had spent a very ugly year indentured at the menagerie. "What can you tell me about Per Haskell?" Nina had asked that night.
"Not much," Inej had admitted. "He's no better or worse than most of the bosses in the barrel."
"And Kaz Brekker?"
"A liar, a thief, and utterly without conscience. But he'll keep to any deal you strike with him."
Nina had heard the conviction in her voice. "He freed you from the menagerie?"
"There is no freedom in the barrel. Only good terms. Tanta Helene's girls never earn out of their contracts. She makes sure they don't. She..."
Inej had broken off then, and Nina had sensed the vibrant anger coursing through her.
"Kaz convinced Per Haskell to pay off my indenture. I would have died at the menagerie."
"You may still die in the dregs." Inej's dark eyes had glinted.
"I may, but I'll die on my feet with a knife in my hand."
The next morning, Inej had helped Nina sneak out of the Emerald Palace. They'd met with Kaz Brekker, and despite his cold ways and those strange leather gloves, she'd agreed to join the dregs and work out of the White Rose. Less than 2 days later, a girl died at the sweet shop, strangled in her bed by a customer dressed as Mr. Crimson, who was never found. Nina had trusted Inej, and she hadn't been sorry for it, though right now she felt furious with everyone. She watched a group of Dime Lions prod the desert lizard with long spears. Apparently, the monster was sated after its meal. It allowed itself to be herded back to the tunnel, its thick body moving side to side in a lazy, sinuous roll. The crowd continued to boo as guards entered the arena to remove the prisoner's remains, tendrils of smoke still curling from his ruined flesh.
"Why are they complaining?" Nina asked angrily. "Isn't this what they came here for?"
"They wanted a fight," said Kaz. "They were expecting him to last longer."
"This is disgusting."
Kaz shrugged.
"Only disgusting thing about it is that I didn't think of it first."
"These men aren't slaves, Kaz. They're prisoners."
"They're murderers and rapists."
"And thieves and con artists. Your people."
"Nina, sweet, they aren't forced to fight. They line up for the chance. They earn better food, private cells, liquor, jurda, conjugals with girls from West Stave."
Muzzin cracked his knuckles.
"Sounds better than we got it at the slack."
Nina looked at the people screaming and shouting, the barkers walking the aisles taking bets. The prisoners of Hellgate might line up to fight, but Pekka Rollins made the real money.
Helvar doesn't fight in the arena, does he?
We aren't here for the ambiance,
Kaz said. Beyond slappable. Are you aware that I could waggle my fingers and make you wet your trousers?
Easy, Heartrender. I like these trousers. And if you start messing with my vital organs, Matthias Helvar will never see sunshine again.
Nina blew out a breath and settled for glowering at no one.
Nina, Inej murmured, don't you start in on me.
It will all work out. Let Kaz do what he does best.
He's horrible.
But effective. Being angry at Kaz for being ruthless is like being angry at a stove for being hot. You know what he is.
Nina crossed her arms. I'm mad at you, too.
Me? Why?
I don't know yet. I just am.
Inej gave Nina's hand a brief squeeze, and after a moment, Nina squeezed back.
She sat through the next fight in a daze, and the next. She told herself she was ready for this, to see him again, to see him here in this brutal place. After all, she was a Grisha, and a soldier of the Second Army. She'd seen worse. But when Matthias emerged from the mouth of the cave below, she knew she'd been wrong.
Nina recognized him instantly. Every night of the past year, she had fallen asleep thinking of Matthias' face.
There was no mistaking the gilded brows, the sharp cut of his cheekbones. But Kaz hadn't lied. Matthias was much changed.
The boy who looked back at the crowd with fury in his eyes was a stranger.
Nina remembered the first time she'd seen Matthias in a moonlit Kalish wood.
His beauty had seemed unfair to her.
In another life, she might have believed he was coming to rescue her. A shining savior with golden hair and eyes the pale blue of northern glaciers. But she'd known the truth of him by the language he spoke, and by the disgust on his face every time his eyes lighted on her. Matthias Helvar was a Druskela, one of the Fjerdan witch hunters tasked with hunting down Grisha to face trial and execution. Though to her he'd always resembled a warrior saint, illuminated in gold. Now he looked like what he truly was, a killer. His bare torso seemed hewn from steel, and though she knew it wasn't possible, he seemed bigger, as if the very structure of his body had changed. His skin had been gilded honey. Now it was fish belly white beneath the grime. And his hair. He'd had such beautiful hair, thick and golden, worn long in the way of Fjerdan soldiers. Now, like the other prisoners, his head had been shaved, probably to prevent lice. Whichever guard had done it had made a mess of the job. Even from this distance she could see the cuts and nicks on his scalp, and little strips of blonde stubble in the places the razor had missed. And yet, he was beautiful still. He glared at the crowd, and gave the wheel a hard spin that nearly knocked it off its base. Tick, 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 tick. Snakes, tiger, bear, boar. The wheel ticked merrily along, then slowed and finally stopped. No,
Nina said, when she saw where the needle was pointing.
It could be worse,
said Muzzin.
Could have landed on the desert lizard again.
She grabbed Kaz's arm through his cloak and felt his muscles tense.
You have to stop this.
Let go of me, Nina.
His gravel rough voice was low, but she sensed real menace in it. She dropped her hand.
Please, you don't understand.
If he survives, I'll take Matthias Helvar out of this place tonight. But this part is up to him.
Nina gave a frustrated shake of her head.
You don't get it.
The guard unbolted Matthias' shackles, and as soon as the chains dropped into the sand, he leapt onto the ladder with the announcer to be lifted to safety. The crowd screamed and stamped. But Matthias stood silent, unmoving. Even when the gate opened, even when the wolves charged out of the tunnel, three of them snarling and snapping, tumbling over one another to get to him. At the last second, Matthias dropped into a crouch, knocking the first wolf into the dirt, then rolling right to pick up the bloodied knife the previous combatant had left in the sand. He sprang to his feet, blade held out before him, but Nina could sense his reluctance. His head was cocked to one side, and the look in his blue eyes was pleading, as if he was trying to engage the two wolves circling him in some silent negotiation. Whatever the plea might have been, it went unheard. The wolf on the right lunged. Matthias crouched low and spun, lodging his knife in the wolf's belly. It gave a miserable yelp, and Matthias seemed to shudder at the sound. It cost him precious seconds. The third wolf was on him, knocking him to the sand. Its teeth sank into his shoulder. He rolled, taking the wolf with him. The wolf's jaws snapped, and Matthias caught them. He wrenched them apart, the muscles of his arms flexing, his face grim. Nina squeezed her eyes shut. There was a sickening crack. The crowd roared. Matthias knelt over the wolf. Its jaw was broken, and it lay on the ground, twitching in pain. He reached for a rock and slammed it hard into the poor animal's skull. It went still, and Matthias's shoulders slumped. The people howled, stomping their feet. Only Nina knew what this was costing him, that he'd been a Druskeller. Wolves were sacred to his kind, bred for battle like their enormous horses. They were friends and companions, fighting side by side with their Druskeller masters. The first wolf had recovered and was circling.
"Move, Matthias," she thought desperately.
He got to his feet, but his movements were slow, weary. His heart wasn't in this fight. His opponents were gray wolves, rangy and wild, but cousins to the white wolves of the Fjärden North. Matthias had no knife, only the bloody rock in his hand, and the remaining wolf prowled the arena between him and the pile of weapons. The wolf lowered its head and bared its teeth. Matthias dove left. The wolf lunged, sinking its teeth into his side. He grunted and hit the ground hard. For a moment, Nina thought he might simply give in and let the wolf take his life. Then he reached out, hand scrabbling through the sand, searching for something. His fingers closed over the shackles that had bound his wrists. He seized them, looped the chain across the wolf's throat, and pulled, the veins in his neck cording from the strain. His bloody face was pressed against the wolf's ruff, his eyes tightly shut, his lips moving. What was he saying? A Druskeller prayer? A farewell? The wolf's hind legs scrabbled at the sand. Its eyes rolled, frightened whites showing bright against its matted fur. A high whine rose from its chest. And then it was over. The creature's body stilled. Both fighters lay unmoving in the sand. Matthias kept his eyes closed, his face still buried in the creature's fur. The crowd thundered its approval. The ladder was lowered, and the announcer sprang down, hauling Matthias to his feet and grabbing his wrist to raise his hand in victory. The announcer gave him a little nudge, and Matthias lifted his head. Nina caught her breath. Tears streaked the dirt on Matthias' face. The rage was gone, and it was like some flame had gone out with it. His North Sea eyes were colder than she'd ever seen them, empty of feeling, stripped of anything human at all. This was what Hellgate had done to him, and it was her fault. The guards took hold of Matthias again, pulling the shackles from the wolf's throat and clapping them back on his wrists. As he was led away, the crowd chanted its disapproval, clamoring, "More, more!"
"Where are they taking him?"
Nina asked, voice trembling.
"To a cell to sleep off the fight," Kaz said.
"Who will see to his injuries?"
"They have medics. We'll wait to make sure he's alone."
"I could heal him," she thought.
But a darker voice rose in her, rich with mocking.
"Not even you can be that foolish, Nina. No healer can cure that boy. You made sure of it."
She thought she would leap from her skin as the minutes burned away. The others watched the next fight, Muzzin avidly, flexing his fingers and speculating on the outcome. Inej silent and still as a statue, Kaz, inscrutable as always, scheming away behind that hideous mask. Nina slowed her own breathing, forced her pulse lower, trying to calm herself. But she could do nothing to mute the riot in her head. Finally, Kaz gave her a nudge.
Ready, Nina? The guard first.
She cast a glance at the prison guard standing by the archway. How down? It was a barrel turn of phrase. How badly do you want him hurt?
Should I?
Knock him out, but don't actually hurt him. They followed Kaz to the arch through which they'd entered. The rest of the crowd took little notice, eyes focused on the fighting below.
Need your escort?
The guard asked as they approached.
I had a question, said Kaz.
Beneath her cape, Nina lifted her hands, sensing the flow of blood in the guard's veins, the tissue of his lungs.
About your mother, and whether the rumors are true.
Nina felt the guard's pulse leap and sighed. Never can make it easy, can you, Kaz? The guard stepped forward, lifting his gun.
What did you say?
His eyelids drooped.
You don't...
Nina dropped his pulse, and he toppled forward. Muzzin grabbed him before he could fall, as Inej swept him into the cloak Kaz had been wearing just moments before. Nina was only mildly surprised to see that Kaz was wearing a prison guard's uniform beneath it.
Couldn't you have just asked him the time or something? Nina said. And where did you get that uniform?
Inej slid the madman's mask down over the guard's face, and Muzzin threw his arm around him, holding him up as if the guard had been drinking too much. They deposited him on one of the benches pressed against the back wall. Kaz tugged on the sleeves of his uniform.
Nina, people love to give up authority to men in nice clothes. I have uniforms for the Stadwatch, the harbor police, and the livery of every merch mansion on the Guildstraat.
Let's go.
They slipped down the passageway. Instead of turning back the way they'd come, they moved counterclockwise around the old tower, the wall of the arena vibrating with voices and stomping feet to their left. The guards posted at each archway paid them little more than a glance, though a few nodded at Kaz, who kept a brisk pace, his face buried in his collar. Nina was so deep in thought that she nearly missed it when Kaz held up a hand for them to slow. They'd rounded a bend between two archways and were in the cover of deep shadow. Ahead of them, a medic was emerging from a cell accompanied by guards, one carrying a lantern.
He'll sleep through the night,
the medic said.
Make sure he drinks something in the morning and check his pupils. I had to give him a powerful sleeping draft.
As the men moved off in the opposite direction, Kaz gestured his group forward. The door in the rock was solid iron, broken only by a narrow slot through which to pass the prisoners' meals. Kaz bent to the lock. Nina eyed the crude iron door.
This place is barbaric.
Most of the better fighters sleep in the old tower, Kaz replied. Keeps them away from the rest of the population.
Nina glanced left and right to where bright light spilled from the arena entryways. There were guards standing in those doorways, distracted maybe, but all one needed to do was turn his head.
If they were caught here,
would the guards bother giving them over to the Stadwatch for trial, or would they simply force them into the ring to be eaten by a tiger?
Maybe something less dignified, she thought bleakly. A swarm of angry voles.
It took Kaz a few quick heartbeats to pick the lock. The door creaked open, and they slipped inside. The cell was pitch black. A brief moment passed, and the cold green glow of a bone light flickered to life beside her. Inej held the little glass sphere aloft. The substance inside was made from the dried and crushed bodies of luminous deep-sea fishes. They were common among crooks in the barrel who didn't want to get caught in a dark alley, but couldn't be bothered to lug around lanterns.
At least it's clean, Nina thought, as her eyes adjusted to the gloom. Barren and icy cold, but not filthy.
She saw a pallet of horse blankets and two buckets placed against the wall, one with a bloody cloth peeking over the rim. This was what the men of Hellgate competed for. A private cell, a blanket, clean water, and a bucket for waste. Matthias slept with his back to the wall. Even in the dim illumination of the bone light, she could see his face was starting to swell. Some kind of ointment had been smeared over his wounds. Calendula. She recognized the smell. Nina moved toward him, but Kaz stopped her with a hand on her arm.
Let Inej assess the damage.
I can... Nina began.
I need you to work on Muzzin.
Inej tossed Kaz the crow-headed cane she must have been hiding beneath her gray imp costume, and knelt over Matthias' body with the bone light. Muzzin stepped forward. He removed his cloak and shirt and the madman's mask. His head was shaved, and he wore prison-issue trousers. Nina looked at Matthias, then back to Muzzin, grasping what Kaz had in mind. The two boys were about the same height and the same build, but that was where the similarities ended. You can't possibly mean for Muzzin to take Matthias's place.
He isn't here for his sparkling conversation, Kaz replied.
You'll need to reproduce Helbar's injuries. Inej, what's the inventory? Bruised knuckles, chipped tooth, two broken ribs. Inej said, third and fourth on the left.
His left or your left?
Kaz asked. His left. This isn't going to work, Nina said in frustration. I can match the damage to Helvar's body, but I'm not a good enough tailor to make Muzzin look like him.
Just trust me, Nina.
I wouldn't trust you to tie my shoes without stealing the laces, Kaz.
She peered at Muzzin's face.
Even if I swell him up, he'll never pass.
Tonight, Matthias Helvar, or rather our dear Muzzin, is going to appear to contract firepox, the lupin strain, carried by wolves and dogs alike. Tomorrow morning, when his guards discover him so covered in pustules that he is unrecognizable, he will be quarantined for a month to see if he survives the fever and to outweigh the contagion. Meanwhile, Matthias will be with us. Get it?
You want me to make Muzzin look like he has firepox?
Yes, and do it quickly, Nina, because in about 10 minutes things are going to get very hectic around here.
Nina stared at him. What was Kaz planning? No matter what I do to him, it won't last a month. I can't give him a permanent fever.
My contact in the infirmary will make sure he stays sick enough. We just need him to get through the diagnosis.
Now get to work. Nina looked Muzzin up and down. This is going to hurt just as much as if you'd been in the fight yourself, she warned.
He scrunched up his face, bracing for the pain. I can take it. She rolled her eyes, then lifted her hands, concentrating.
With a sharp slice of her right hand over her left, she snapped Muzzin's ribs.
He let out a grunt and doubled over. That's a good boy, Kaz, taking it like a champion. Knuckles next, then face.
Nina spread bruises and cuts over Muzzin's knuckles and arms, matching the wounds to Inej's descriptions. I've never seen firepox up close, Nina said. She was only familiar with illustrations from books they'd used in their anatomy training at the Little Palace.
Count yourself lucky, Kaz said grimly.
Hurry it up. She worked from memory, swelling and cracking the skin on Muzzin's face and chest, raising blisters until the swelling and pustules were so bad that he was truly unrecognizable. The big man moaned. Why would you agree to do this? Nina murmured. The swollen flesh of Muzzin's face quivered, and Nina thought he might be trying to smile.
Money was good,
he said thickly. She sighed. Why else did anyone do anything in the barrel? Good enough to get locked up in Hellgate? Kaz tapped his cane on the cell floor.
Stop making trouble, Nina. If Helvar cooperates, he and Muzzin will both have their freedom just as soon as the job is done.
And if he doesn't?
Then Helvar gets locked back in his cell, and Muzzin still gets paid. And I'll take him to breakfast at the Cooperom.
Can I have waffles?
Muzzin mumbled.
We'll all have waffles. And whiskey.
If this job doesn't come off, no one's going to want to be around me sober.
Finished, Nina?
Nina nodded, and Inej took her place to bandage Muzzin to look like Matthias.
All right, said Kaz. Get Helvar on his feet.
Nina crouched beside Matthias as Kaz stood over her with the bone light. Even in sleep, Matthias's features were troubled, his pale brows furrowed. She let her hands travel over the bruised line of his jaw, resisting the urge to linger there.
Not the face, Nina. I need him mobile, not pretty. Heal him fast, and only enough to get him walking for now. I don't want him spry enough to vex us.
Nina lowered the blanket and went to work. Just another body, she told herself. She was always getting late-night calls from Kaz to heal wounded members of the dregs, who he didn't want to bring around to any legitimate medic. Girls with stabbing punctures, boys with broken legs or bullets lodged inside them. Victims of a scuffle with the Stadwatch or another gang. Pretend it's Muzzin, she told herself. Or Big Bolliger, or some other fool. You don't know this boy. And it was true. The boy she knew might have been the scaffold, but something new had been built upon it. She touched his shoulder gently. Helvar, she said. He didn't stir. Matthias. A lump rose in her throat, and she felt the ache of tears threatening. She pressed a kiss to his temple. She knew that Kaz and the others were watching, and that she was making an idiot of herself. But after so long, he was finally here, in front of her, and so very broken. Matthias, she repeated.
Nina.
His voice was raw, but as lovely as she remembered.
Oh, saints, Matthias, she whispered. Please wake up.
His eyes opened, groggily, palest blue.
Nina,
he said softly. His knuckles brushed her cheek. His rough hand cupped her face tentatively, disbelieving.
Nina?
Her eyes filled with tears.
Shh, Matthias. We're here to get you out.
Before she could blink, he had hold of her shoulders and had pinned her to the ground.
Nina,
he growled. Then his hands closed over her throat.
Part 2. Servant and Lever.
7. Matthias. Matthias was dreaming again, dreaming of her. In all his dreams, he hunted her, sometimes through the new green meadows of spring, but usually through the ice fields, dodging boulders and crevasses with unerring steps. Always he chased, and always he caught her. In the good dreams, he slammed her to the ground and throttled her, watching the life drain from her eyes, heart full of vengeance. Finally, finally. In the bad dreams, he kissed her. In these dreams, she didn't fight him. She laughed as if the chase was nothing but a game, as if she'd known he would catch her, as if she'd wanted him to, and there was no place she'd rather be than beneath him. She was welcoming and perfect in his arms. He kissed her, buried his face in the sweet hollow of her neck. Her curls brushed his cheeks, and he felt that if he could just hold her a little longer, every wound, every hurt, every bad thing would melt away.
Matthias,
she would whisper, his name so soft on her lips. These were the worst dreams. And when he woke, he hated himself almost as much as he hated her. To know that he could betray himself, betray his country again, even in sleep. To know that, after everything she'd done, some sick part of him still hungered after her. It was too much. Tonight was a bad dream. Very bad. She was wearing blue silk, clothes far more luxurious than anything he'd ever seen her in. Some kind of gauzy veil was caught up in her hair, the lamplight glinting off it like caught rain. Gel, she smelled good. The mossy damp was still there, but the perfume, too. Nina loved luxury, and this was expensive. Roses and something else, something his pauper's nose didn't recognize. She pressed her soft lips to his temple, and he could swear she was crying.
Matthias.
Nina, he managed.
Oh, Saints Matthias, she whispered. Please wake up.
And then he was awake, and he knew he'd gone mad because she was here, in his cell, kneeling beside him, her hand resting gently on his chest.
Matthias, please.
The sound of her voice pleading with him. He dreamed of this. Sometimes she pleaded for mercy. Sometimes there were other things she begged for. He reached up and touched her face. She had the softest skin. He'd laughed at her for it once. No real soldier had skin like that, he told her, pampered, coddled. He'd mocked the lushness of her body, ashamed of his own response to her. He cupped the warm curve of her cheek, felt the soft brush of her hair. So lovely, so real. It wasn't fair. Then he registered the bloody wrappings on his hands. Pain rushed at him as he came fully awake, cracked ribs, aching knuckles. He chipped a tooth. He wasn't sure when, but he'd cut his tongue against it at some point. His mouth still held the coppery taste of blood. The wolves. They'd made him murder wolves. He was awake. Nina. There were tears in her beautiful green eyes. Rage coursed through him. She had no right to tears, no right to pity.
Shh, Matthias. We're here to get you out.
What game was this? What new cruelty? He'd just learned to survive in this monstrous place, and now she'd come to heap some fresh torture on him. He launched himself forward, flipping her to the ground, hands fastened tight around her throat, straddling her so that his knees pinned her arms to the ground. He knew damn well that Nina, with her hands free, was a deadly thing. Nina, he gritted out. She clawed at his hands. Witch, he hissed, leaning over her. He saw her eyes widen, her face getting redder. Beg me, he said. Beg me for your life. He heard a click, and a gravelly voice said, Hands off her, Elvar. Someone behind him had pressed a gun to his neck. Matthias didn't spare him a glance. Go ahead and shoot me, he said. He dug his fingertips deeper into Nina's neck. Nothing would deprive him of this. Nothing. Traitor, witch, abomination. All those words came to him, but others crowded in too. Beautiful, charmed one. Rode Fetla, he'd called her. Little red bird, for the color of her Grisha order. The color she loved. He squeezed harder, silencing that weak-willed strain inside him.
If you've actually lost your mind, this is going to be a lot tougher than I thought, said that raspy voice.
He heard a whoosh like something moving through the air, then a wrenching pain shot through his left shoulder. It felt like he'd been punched by a tiny fist, but his entire arm went numb. He grunted as he fell forward, one hand still clamped around Nina's throat. He would have fallen directly onto her, but he was yanked backward by the collar of his shirt. A boy wearing a guard's uniform stood before him, dark eyes glittering, a pistol in one hand, a walking stick in another. Its handle was carved to look like a crow's head, with a cruelly pointed beak.
Get hold of yourself, Halvar. We're here to break you out. I can do to your leg what I did to your arm, and we can drag you out of here, or you can leave like a man, on 2 feet.
No one gets out of Hellgate, Matthias said.
Tonight they do.
Matthias sat forward, trying to get his bearings, clutching his dead arm.
You can't just walk me out of here. The guards will recognize me, he snarled. I'm not losing fighting privileges to be carted off Jell knows where with you.
You'll be masked.
If the guards check, they're going to be too busy to check, said the strange, pale boy.
And then the screaming started. Matthias' head jerked up. He heard the thunder of footsteps from the arena, cresting like a wave as people burst into the passageway outside his cell. He heard the shouts of guards, and then the roaring of a great cat, the trumpet of an elephant.
You opened the cages.
Nina's voice was shaky with disbelief, though who knew what might be real or performance with her. He refused to look in her direction. If he did, he'd lose all sense of reality. He was barely hanging on as it was.
Jesper was supposed to wait until three bells, said the pale boy.
It is three bells, Kaz,
replied a small girl in the corner with dark hair and deep bronze Suli skin. A figure covered in welts and bandages was leaning against her.
Since when is Jesper punctual? The boy complained with a glance at his watch. On your feet, Helvar.
He offered him a gloved hand. Matthias stared at it. This is a dream. The strangest dream I've ever had, but definitely a dream. Or maybe killing the wolves had finally driven him truly mad. He'd murdered family tonight. No whispered prayers for their wild souls would make it right. He looked up at the pale demon with his black-gloved hands. Kaz, she'd called him. Would he lead Matthias out of this nightmare, or just drag him into another kind of hell? Choose, Helvar. Matthias clasped the boy's hand. If this was real and not illusion, he'd escape whatever trap these creatures had set for him. He heard Nina release a long breath. Was she relieved? Exasperated? He shook his head. He would deal with her later. The little bronze girl swept a cloak around Matthias's shoulders and propped an ugly, beak-nosed mask on his head. The passageway outside the cell was chaos. Costumed men and women surged past, screaming and pushing each other, trying to get away from the arena. Guards had their guns out, and he could hear shots being fired. He felt dizzy, and his side ached badly. His left arm was still useless. Kaz signaled toward the far right archway, indicating that they should move against the flow of the crowd and into the arena. Matthias didn't care. He could plunge through the mob instead, force his way up that staircase and onto a boat. And then what? It didn't matter. There was no time for planning. He stepped into the throng and was instantly hauled back.
Boys like you weren't meant to get ideas, Helvar, said Kaz. That staircase leads to a bottleneck. You think the guards won't check under that mask before they let you through?
Matthias scowled and followed the others through the crowd, Kaz's hand at his back. If the passage had been chaos, then the arena was a special kind of madness. Matthias glimpsed hyenas leaping and bounding over the ledges. One was feeding over a body in a crimson cape. An elephant charged the wall of the stadium, sending up a cloud of dust and bellowing its frustration. He saw a white bear and one of the great jungle cats from the southern colonies crouching in the eaves, its teeth bared. He knew there were snakes in the cages as well. He could only hope that this Jesper character hadn't been foolish enough to set them free too. They plunged across the sands where Matthias had fought for privileges for the last 6 months, but as they headed toward the tunnel, the desert lizard came pounding toward them, its mouth dripping, foaming white poison, its fat tail lashing the ground. Before Matthias could think to move, the bronze girl had vaulted over its back and dispatched the creature with two bright daggers wedged beneath the armor of its scales. The lizard groaned and collapsed on its side. Matthias felt a pang of sadness. It was a grotesque creature, and he'd never seen a fighter survive its attack. But it was also a living thing.
You've never seen a fighter survive until now, he corrected himself. The bronze girl's daggers merit watching.
He'd assumed they'd cross the arena and head back up into the stands to avoid the crowds clogging the passageway, possibly just storm the stairs and hope to make it through the guards who must be waiting at the top. Instead, Kaz led them down the tunnel past the cages. The cages were old cells that had been turned over to whatever beasts the masters of the Hell Show had gotten their hands on that week. Old circus animals, even diseased livestock in a pinch, creatures culled from forest and countryside. As they raced past the open doors, he glimpsed a pair of yellow eyes glaring at him from the shadows, and then he was moving on. He cursed his deadened arm and lack of weapon. He was virtually defenseless.
Where is this Kaz leading us?
They wended past a wild boar feeding on a guard and a spotted cat that hissed and spit at them, but did not draw near. And then, through the musk of animals and the stink of their waste, he smelled the clean tang of salt water. He heard the rush of waves. He slipped and discovered the stones beneath his feet were damp. He was deeper in the tunnel than he'd ever been permitted to go. It must lead to the sea. Whatever Nina and her people intended, they really were taking him out of the bowels of Hellgate. In the green light from the orbs carried by Kaz and the Bronze Girl, he spotted a tiny boat moored up ahead. It looked like a guard was seated in it, but he raised a hand and waved them forward.
"You were early, Jesper," Kaz said as he nudged Matthias toward the boat.
"I was on time."
"For you, that's early. Next time you plan to impress me, give me some warning."
"The animals are out, and I found you a boat. This is when a thank you would be in order."
"Thank you, Jesper," said Nina.
"You're very welcome, gorgeous. See, Kaz, that's how the civilized folk do." Matthias was only half listening. The fingers of his left hand had started to tingle as sensation returned. He couldn't fight all of them, not in this state, and not when they were armed. But Kaz and the boy in the boat, Jesper, looked to be the only ones with guns. Unhook the rope, disable Jesper. He'd have a gun and possession of the boat. "And Nina can stop your heart before you've taken hold of the oars," he reminded himself. "So shoot her first. Put a bullet in her heart. Stay long enough to watch her fall and then be done with this place." He could do it. He knew he could. All he needed was a distraction. The Bronze Girl was standing just to his right. She barely reached his shoulder. Even injured, he could knock her into the water without losing his footing or doing her any real harm. Drop the girl, free the boat, disable the shooter, kill Nina, kill Nina, kill Nina. He took a deep breath and threw his weight at the Bronze Girl. She stepped aside as if she'd known he was coming, languidly hooking her heel behind his ankle. Matthias let out a loud grunt as he landed hard on the stones.
"Matthias,"
Nina said, stepping forward. He scrambled backward, nearly landing himself in the water. If she laid hands on him again, he'd lose his mind. Nina halted, the hurt on her face unmistakable. She had no right.
"Clumsy, this one,"
the Bronze Girl said impassively.
"Put him under, Nina," commanded Kaz.
"Don't!" Matthias protested, panic surging through him.
"You're dumb enough to capsize the boat."
"Stay away from me, witch," Matthias growled at Nina. Nina gave him a tight nod.
"With pleasure."
She lifted her hands, and Matthias felt his eyelids grow heavy as she dragged him into unconsciousness.
"Kill you," he mumbled.
"Sleep well."
Her voice was a wolf, dogging his steps. It chased him into the dark. In a windowless room draped in black and crimson, Matthias listened silently to the strange words coming out of the pale, freakish boy's mouth. Matthias knew monsters, and one glance at Kaz Brekker had told him this was a creature who had spent too long in the dark. He'd brought something back with him when he'd crawled into the light. Matthias could sense it around him. He knew others laughed at Fjärden's superstition, but he trusted his gut. Or he had, until Nina. That had been one of the worst effects of her betrayal, the way he'd been forced to second-guess himself. That doubt had almost been his undoing at Hellgate, where instinct was everything. He'd heard Brekker's name in prison, and the words associated with him. Criminal prodigy, ruthless, amoral. They called him Dirty Hands because there was no sin he would not commit for the right price. And now this demon was talking about breaking into the ice court, about getting Matthias to commit treason. "Again," Matthias corrected himself. "I'd be committing treason again." He kept his eyes on Brekker. He was keenly aware of Nina watching him from the other side of the room. He could still smell her rose perfume in his nose and even in his mouth. The sharp flower scent rested against his tongue, as if he were tasting her. Matthias had woken, bound and tied to a chair in what looked like some kind of gambling parlor. Nina must have brought him out of the stupor she'd placed him in. She was there, along with the Bronze Girl. Jesper, the long-limbed boy from the boat, sat in a corner with his bony knees drawn up, and a boy with ruddy gold curls doodled aimlessly on a scrap of paper atop a round table made for playing cards, occasionally gnawing on his thumb. The table was covered with a crimson cloth, flocked with a repeating pattern of crows, and a wheel similar to the one used in the Hell Show arena but with different markings had been propped against a black lacquered wall. Matthias had the feeling that someone, probably Nina, had tended to more of his injuries while he was unconscious. The thought made him sick. Better clean pain than Grisha corruption. Then Brecker had started talking. About a drug called Jurdaparum, about an impossibly high reward, and about the absurd idea of attempting a raid on the ice court. Matthias wasn't sure what might be fact or fiction, but it hardly mattered. When Brecker finally finished, Matthias simply said, "No."
"Believe me when I say this, Helvar. I know getting knocked out and waking up in strange surroundings isn't the friendliest way to start a partnership, but you didn't give us many options, so try to open your mind to the possibilities."
"You could have come to me on your knees and my answer would be the same."
"You do understand I can have you back at Hellgate in a matter of hours? Once poor Muzzin is in the infirmary, the switch will be easy."
"Do it. I can't wait to tell the warden your ridiculous plans."
"What makes you think you'll be going back with a tongue?"
"Kaz,"
Nina protested. "Do what you want," Matthias said. He wouldn't betray his country again.
"I told you," said Nina.
"Don't pretend to know me, witch,"
he snarled, his eyes trained on Brecker. He wouldn't look at her. He refused to. Jesper unfolded himself from the corner. Now that they were out of the Hellgate gloom, Matthias could see he had deep brown, zemony skin and incongruous gray eyes. He was built like a stork.
"Without him, there's no job," said Jesper. "We can't break into the ice court blind."
Matthias wanted to laugh.
"You can't break into the ice court at all."
The ice court wasn't an ordinary building. It was a compound. Fjerda's ancient stronghold, home to an unbroken succession of kings and queens, repository of their greatest treasures and most sacred religious relics. It was impenetrable.
"Come now, Helvar," said the demon. "Surely there's something you want. The cause is righteous enough for a zealot like you. Fjerda may think they've caught a dragon by the tail, but they won't be able to hold on. Once Bol-Yul Bayur replicates his process, Jurdaparum will enter the market, and it's only a matter of time before others learn to manufacture it too."
"It will never happen. Yul Bayur will stand trial, and if he is found guilty, he will be put to death."
"Guilty of what?"
Nina asked softly. "Crimes against the people."
"Which people?"
He could hear the barely leashed anger in her voice. "Natural people," Matthias replied. "People who live in harmony with the laws of this world instead of twisting them for their own gain." Nina made a kind of exasperated snorting sound. The others just looked amused, smirking at the poor, backward Fjerdin. Brum had warned Matthias that the world was full of liars, pleasure-seekers, faithless heathens, and there seemed to be a concentration of them in this room.
"You're being short-sighted about this, Helbar," said Brecker. "Another team could get to Yul Bayur first. The Shu, maybe the Rafkins, all with their own agendas. Border disputes and old rivalries don't matter to the Kirch. All the Merchant Council cares about is trade, and they want to make sure Jurdaparum remains a rumor and nothing more."
"So leading criminals into the heart of Fjerda to steal a valued prisoner is a patriotic act?" Matthias said scornfully.
"I don't suppose the promise of 4 million Kruga will sway you either,"
Matthias spat.
"You can keep your money. Choke on it."
Then a thought came to him, vile, barbaric, but the one thing that might allow him to return to Hellgate with peace in his heart, even if he didn't have a tongue in his head. He tilted back as far as his bonds would permit and focused all his attention on Brecker.
"I'll make a deal with you." "I'm listening."
"I won't go with you, but I'll give you a plan for the layout of the court. That should at least get you past the first checkpoint."
"And what will this valuable information cost me?"
"I don't want your money. I'll give you the plans for nothing." It shamed Matthias to say the words, but he spoke them anyway. "If you let me kill Nina Zenik." The little bronze girl made a sound of disgust, her contempt for him clear, and the boy at the table stopped doodling, his mouth falling open. Kaz, however, didn't seem surprised. If anything, he looked pleased. Matthias had the uncomfortable sense that the demon had known exactly how this would play out.